Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, why do we procrastinate? The psychological origins of procrastination and how we can stop putting things off, an article that caught our attention a long time ago when we were very studiously planning shows that might be of interest to you in the future. Doesn't always happen, but thought we'd give ourselves a little credit. Sometimes we procrastinate as well. Everybody does. Professor Dr. Elliot Berkman is our guest. He is a psychologist and assistant professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. His research is on goal pursuit, which would offer some clues from neuroscience about why we procrastinate and how to overcome this tendency. We've all experienced it, and some of us experience it a whole lot and would like to be able to not procrastinate to get things done in a timely fashion. So he will also offer some simple ideas to defeat procrastination. Our phone number during the course of this hour, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, Twitter is at K Dunn Show, and remember, you have less than an hour to talk about this because if you procrastinate, this idea, this whole discussion will be off the air, so you need to get your thoughts in now. Dr. Elliot Berkman, hello. Thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you for having me.
So you really would rather clean the house than get done what you need to do? Seriously?
Sometimes, yes. Clean the house, rebuild my web page. All of these things have taken precedent over actual work.
And this was grading papers, or might it be something else? Do you have a particular aversion? I know many people who find it very hard to grade lots and lots of papers. It's a big job.
Yeah, for me, it's often grading papers. There's something about it's both tedious but also anxiety-provoking because I'm so aware that students' grades are on the line and every little decision matters so much. Just I'd much rather do it another time.
Yeah, but you know how valuable it is.
I do, though sometimes I need a reminder.
How can you be reminded?
Well, that's one of the tricks. We've talked about, I've written about this, and I'm happy to talk about it here, this idea that procrastination in some regards is kind of a deficit of value, that I'm not valuing the goal enough. That's, I think, kind of almost a kind of a deep insight into procrastination, that one part of the problem is that sort of we know it on an intellectual level that it's important, but it just doesn't feel important to us in the moment.
Mm-hmm. You say that the definition of procrastination in psychological terms is what happens when the value of doing something else outweighs the value of working now. Does that mean that the value of doing something else is truly more important to us for our self-worth, for our psychological well-being, than what needs to be done? It would appear to me from what you just said that the opposite would be true, and so I'm wondering why we even see value in doing something else.
Right, that's a great question. So I have my answer has two parts. One is that value is relative, and so it could well be that, for example, cleaning the house has some very small amount of value, but it could still be greater than whatever the present moment value of my goal, say, grading. The other part of the answer is that what gets put into value is both how important something is, how much it matters, how important it is to our identity, but also some sense of what the costs are. And so I think in that case, in the cleaning the house example, I know that cleaning the house has some small positive value, but I also feel that the costs are relatively low. It's something that I know how to do really well. It's easily accessible to me. I can kind of, you know, listen to music maybe while I'm doing it, and there's some value. Whereas on the other hand, the value of grading papers might be kind of reduced or diminished by the fact that the costs feel so high.
Mm-hmm. You also write about, and this is real interesting, that people are not entirely rational in the way that they value things.
No, and that's certainly not my idea. In fact, I think one of the best kind of examples of research in modern psychology was done by folks named Amos Tversky and Danny Kahneman, and they actually won a Nobel Prize for this work. And one of the insights of their work is that there's not a perfect mapping between what you might call objective value, for example, a dollar amount, and the what they would call a subjective value, and how valuable something feels to us. So that's where our preferences kind of get distorted a little bit. There are good evolutionary reasons why people operate this in this way. But one of the kind of classic examples is that a dollar 6 months from now feels like it's worth a lot less to us than a dollar right now, even mm-hmm. though that's kind of strictly irrational in some sense. And I think that tendency, what psychologists and economists would call temporal discounting or delay discounting, the tendency to essentially devalue things that happen in the future, seems to be a very fundamental fact of human psychology.
And I would imagine that it's only heightened now because everything for us is instantaneous. We can delay television shows and watch them when we feel like it. We have all these devices. We can find out what's happening and be in touch with people instantaneously. We want it instantaneously.
That's right. Yeah, present moment experiences are always more valuable than things that happen in the future.
Mm-hmm. You let's talk a little bit more. Most people, this astounds me. Although if I were younger, this would probably be the case for me, too, because I really needed the money. Receiving $100 3 months from now is worth the same to people as receiving $83 right now. Most people would feel that way?
Well, I think that's certainly what research has shown. I mean,
wow.
Those exact dollar amounts were something that I pulled from a paper. I wouldn't, put too fine of a point on that. But the tendency, to devalue money that happens in the future is pretty fundamental. And there are plenty of examples of it. I mean, I think right now our nation faces this nothing short of an epidemic of lack of savings, right? People don't
Yes.
save for retirement. And economists, and certainly economists who are kind of psychologically savvy, have pointed to this exact tendency that thinking about how much money you'll have in the future really doesn't feel like actually your money right now. It sort of feels less valuable to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so that explains why, I'd rather, given the choice of putting $100 in the bank right now to have now versus $100 in a different account that, I wouldn't access for many years, so many people make the decision to, sort of spend it now.
Right. When you look at procrastination, can you look at along our time frame as human beings? Are we more likely to procrastinate when we're talking about adults mostly or late adolescents, when we're very young? Or if you're a procrastinator when you're young, are you always a procrastinator?
That's a great question. There seemed to be some stability in our tendency to devalue things in the future. So I would hazard a guess that there's some kind of correlation between how you would act as a younger person and how you act as an older person as you age. The other aspect of that is it's interesting. I don't think anybody really knows where that comes from. I mean, I don't think anybody really would seriously believe that you're born with whatever your tendency to devalue things and that's just the way it is for your entire life. But that's sort of the extreme nature account. And on the other hand, I don't think anybody would argue that it's completely determined by your environment. But there's no question that you can be taught, you can learn to delay rewards, to a greater extent than you otherwise would. And that seems to be an important task. That's something parents do for their children. If you have a toddler or interacted with one, they're very quite bad at, figuring out how much things are worth now versus
right,
but they develop. I mean, they learn that.
You have a toddler, don't you?
Naturally,
yeah. It's a very very trying age.
A toddler 2 days after Halloween, nonetheless.
So. Oh, great! That's a great time for that.
Such a challenge, right?
Yeah. So
now, no, we don't eat candy for breakfast.
Exactly.
Have it later.
I know.
And it's just.
Well, I held off my candy until after lunch, but just barely, I must tell you, because we have a lot of candy in the office today. So we can be taught to delay rewards. How can we be taught to do that?
Well, I think it's as simple as, two things. I mean, psychologists have studied this question. One of the most powerful ways is simply modeling, showing your children or other people, not necessarily even your children, just demonstrating for them how it's done. Humans have, I've kind of mentioned this tendency to delay, to discount delayed rewards. We don't do it as much as other species. And we also have this powerful capacity to learn through observation. And so that's probably, you know, I would say the first tool that I would pull out of the toolkit.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is you can sort of tip the scales. If you think about what I alluded to earlier, that the way the kind of way something feels in the present moment is sort of a combination of its costs and its benefits. We can kind of tip the scales in interesting ways. You can impose a cost. You can say, you know, look, you can have this now, but you know, it'll cost you. You have to work for it. You have to do something else. Maybe you get a little less. Or if you wait until later, then you could have maybe even more. So that would be another little trick, is to kind of leverage the fact that we now know quite a bit about what goes into that calculation of, you know, how valuable something feels in the present moment, and we can use that knowledge to tip the scales.
Mm-hmm. Well, this may sound very simplistic, but I'm wondering what you would add to this. You talk about the further away the deadline of something, the less attractive it seems to work on the project right now. And we all know that. We all sometimes wait until the very last minute to do something. So there should be a way. And what do? Just visualize the future so that you can do a little bit at a time? Or is it more than that?
Yeah, I mean, that is one way. There are some caveats to the visualize the future argument. And one, this psychologist named Gabrielle Oettingen has done quite a bit of really interesting work on this. It's not merely just visualizing the future. That actually tends to be demotivating if you're thinking about how good it would feel to have this goal behind us, which is kind of this sort of fantasy of the future. What she recommends is to really visualize through the obstacles. So think through not just how it would feel to accomplish your task, whatever it is that you're trying to work on, but also try to anticipate what the obstacles are and try to visualize in particular detail sort of the process that you would need to go through to get there. That sounds a little counterintuitive, but she's certainly found that doing that increases your commitment to the goal, to whatever you do, which I think in turn adds some value to it.
And does it make sense to just have yourself do a little bit of the task, if you know it's a month in the future or even a week in the future, to do a little bit day by day? Is that more manageable for people who procrastinate, or they not even want to do that?
Yeah, there's huge individual differences here.
Right.
But certainly for some people, trying to break it down into sub-goals, I think, sort of based on my own research, I think one of the reasons that can work is not because so much you're breaking it down, but more particularly that each individual step has an earlier deadline, right? And there's this tendency to sort of continually discount things as they go further and further in the future. So the closer something is in time, even if it's just tomorrow, the more valuable it's going to feel compared to its being, you know, Thursday. And then the other thing is that breaking things down, similar to what Oettingen has found, which is that it can reduce the perceived cost, because if you can really kind of visualize, or if the steps that you need to take to get there are tangible to you, that's going to seem a lot less burdensome than if you're trying to visualize an end state where you don't feel like you have all of the tools to get there.
Mm-hmm. What about the consequences? It was reading another article about procrastination, and this was I guess it was a study done by people at Florida State University who said that procrastinators can end up suffering more and performing worse than other people. Are there real serious consequences if you don't take on this procrastination and try to do something about it? Are the consequences serious?
Yeah, they can be. I'm not familiar with that particular study, but certainly, I mean, if you procrastinate to the point that you're missing meaningful deadlines, that can definitely be an impediment.
Yeah, you know, I guess their study was rating college students on a scale of procrastination and then tracking their academic performance and their general health throughout the semester, and they found that procrastinators suffered.
Interesting. Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. I mean, certainly you know, in the college setting, there's clear incentives to getting things done earlier. As a college professor, you know, it's not hard to tell which essays were the ones that were written, you know, last night.
Really? Can you tell? How do you tell?
Well, I mean, some of it's just clearly these things have not been proofread.
Oh.
That's one. And I think students who tend to do things earlier tend to proofread them, and, you know, you have time.
Right.
But there's also something, I think it's hard to put your finger on the cause, right? So I think people who procrastinate might do a bunch of other things as well that would contribute to poor grades and particularly to poor health, right? So it might be maybe not procrastination per se. It could be something like this delay discounting that, you know, for whatever reason, maybe I'm a person who steeply discounts rewards in the future, right? Well, that is going to make me procrastinate on my assignments, but that's also going to make me do a bunch of other things, you know, potentially engaging in certain health-risking behaviors, other kinds of activities. And so it may be that multiple kind of bad outcomes, including procrastination, are all caused by this one common thing. In fact, there's an interesting kind of model of addiction, and I'm talking about drug addiction, that's entirely based on this kind of tendency to delay or to discount rewards that happen in the future.
That's interesting. Well, let's welcome phone calls for our guest. Dr. Elliot Berkman is a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon and wrote an article that we found on procrastination. And we thought, isn't this interesting? And it's prompted conversation in the office about we all have instances when we've been procrastinators. And sometimes if it becomes too much a pattern in your life, it's becomes very difficult. So why is it that we procrastinate? And what is it that we can do to look at the reward of getting something done that is on time? And even though it's helpful for us to work on it right now, it may be due next week or the week after. It could be better, and it will help our sense of self-worth to get it done. What are the tips that we need to learn to get us to get on task? And why is it that we do just about anything else than other than what we have to do? Well, let's hear your procrastination stories, if you don't mind. We all have them, and maybe ways that you've licked it or help that you need. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we are on Twitter as well, and that's at K Dunn Show. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to phone calls. Procrastination and how to get rid of it is what we're talking about this hour. And our guest is Dr. Elliot Berkman. We start our calls with Steve in Ontario. Hello, Steve.
Well, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
And Dr. Berkman. Hey, my question, I guess, what I wanted to ask you guys, you talked about having a negative consequence for procrastination. And, you know, I was wondering if you've ever studied the idea of, you know, every behavior has a consequence, and whether it's positive or negative, and the consequence controls whatever you do. And also, you asked about whether or not you save that $100 for your retirement account or put it in your bank and spend, you know, where you can write checks out of it. And, you know, the idea being that if it's soon, certain, and positive, you know, in other words, the power of the consequence, if the result is soon, so if the $100 is it has much more power than, say, a consequence that is later, uncertain, or negative. So in the chance of saving the $100 for retirement, well, it's certainly later, and whether or not the market's going to go up and down makes it a little bit uncertain, and it has a positive consequence at the end, but it's still a pretty low score versus putting the money in your pocket and go out and going out to dinner or something like
right.
that with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, you know, I've studied a concept called ABC analysis, and I just wondered if you've ever heard of that and what his thoughts are on that.
Well, Steve, thanks for your question. I think you put your finger on a really important point here, which is that, you know, it's kind of getting at the adaptive reasons of why do we procrastinate. And your point is that, you know, if you go for the sooner reward, almost always it's certain, right? And so it gets rewarded, you know, close to 100% of the time. If I take that $100 and spend it, I can, you know, very, you know, clearly spend it on something that will feel good. So part of that is this challenge of, you know, we as a species didn't really evolve to save for retirement. That's not something, you know, that ever right. really happened to us. You know, it's not something that's been passed down. It's totally an abstract concept. And, you know, and you're right about that. You know, we didn't used to live that long as well. And so, you know, sure, I could take that $100 in a month or a year or, you know, even tomorrow. It's like there's no guarantee that I'll be around to spend it. And so some of these things get at this sort of question of why do we have this tendency to delay or to discount delayed rewards. And the other part is that the more you procrastinate, if you get rewarded for it, it's just going to make it more and more likely to happen, which is also
exactly.
true.
It makes it stronger the next time that you're faced with that same decision.
Yep.
You're gonna follow that pattern again.
Yeah, that's right. And it becomes entrenched. And I haven't studied that particular kind of procrastination, but certainly there's a whole kind of clinical, psychopathological angle on procrastination where at some point it does become, you know, such a problem for people. It can, you know, can be contribute to depression. It's sort of intertwined with depression. And it can become very problematic.
Sure.
But even in less extreme cases, it can still be a problem. And the issue you're putting your finger on is that the challenge of procrastination is we need to figure out a way to essentially reward ourselves or to kind of increase the value present moment for something that we've never been rewarded for. And that's
right.
a thing that is very difficult and that no species has ever really, you know, evolved to do, to kind of approach a novel, you know, basically engage in a novel behavior. I mean, that's retirement savings is a classic definition of that. I mean, if you're saving for retirement, it means you have not yet sort of been rewarded for doing that. And so that's a very difficult behavior for lots of good reasons.
So finding
ways to make it valuable is the key.
Yeah. So how would you do that? You've thought about this long and hard, it sounds, Steve. And there are a lot of people who find themselves about to retire, and the studies show, I mean, the figures show that people have saved very, very little money, so retirement's going to be hard. What kind of strategy would you devise to get those with maybe mild procrastination to think about this in a serious way? What would you do?
Well, that's a fantastic question, and, you know, it's trying to figure out, everybody has to answer that "what's in it for me" question,
mm-hmm.
and you also touched on a really interesting phenomenon that people who have that retirement income there, they don't really consider it as theirs. They have no connection to it
right.
because they haven't mm-hmm. gotten the pleasure of it.
Mm-hmm. I think his phone went. Carry on with that, Dr. Berkman.
Well, I think it's true, is the question of what's in it for me. I mean, there's kind of an interesting public policy angle on this, and this has been advocated by behavioral economists, people named, for example, one named Richard Thaler, where you kind of make it less of a choice. If, you know, procrastination always kind of emerges from the situation where you can either do one thing or a different thing. And one point would be something like default savings accounts, where, you know, if you do nothing, inertia, basically, point, you know, well, you'll be saving for retirement by default, and you can always opt out of it. So you can make a choice to go to kind of remove yourself from that situation. And what's interesting is that kind of insight leverages the same kind of psychology as some of the things I'm talking about, where objectively speaking, there's no difference between, you know, being defaulted into a retirement account and needing to opt out to say no versus defaulting into no retirement account and needing to opt in. I mean, it's just you're choosing one of two things, but there's a real kind of psychological power, a value, if you will, to
right.
inertia. So that's clearly at the policy level one really big important thing that we could do. At the individual level, I would advocate trying to identify behaviors that have been rewarded, other things that are valuable to you, and trying to connect those to the target behavior that you're procrastinating on. So if it's saving for retirement, trying to think about what's important to you. You know, a lot of people will say, well, family is very important, or, you know, security is very important. And those are things that we have kind of been rewarded for very tangibly in the past, and trying to reconceive of the behavior as part of that larger value for you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. Thank you so much, Steve, for your call. It was a good one. Tom in Nelson. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
And thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, I've been a procrastinator my whole life. Lots of all-nighters, finishing papers and all that.
Oh, right.
Exams,
yep.
College, but now I'm retired. Now, the thing is, now I realize I'm a perfectionist. And to me, that's been the reason for the procrastination. It's kind of like, well, I've got to do it just right, until it's like, oh, now I've just got to get it done. So just do it. And what comes out, comes out. But to what extent is procrastination due to that fact that a person has that thing of, oh, I've got to, you know, do it perfectly, or that perfectionism impact a procrastinator?
Right. That's great. Thanks for your question, Tom. That's a flavor of this procrastination, is the kind of letting the good be the enemy of the perfect. And it's exactly that you know, if you feel like it has to be so perfect, I mean, the way I would kind of recast that situation is that, you know, maybe you value whatever the you know, behavior is you're trying to work on, but you also see the cost is very high, because if you're a perfectionist, you want things to be perfect, and so you kind of are well aware of what kind of effort needs to go into that and what kind of scrutiny you'll place it under. And so between, you know, those high costs, it kind of diminishes the value of it. And you need a way to excuse yourself, to kind of let yourself off the hook in some ways. And so psychologists have talked about this as what we call self-handicapping. And in some ways, you're using procrastination strategically as a tool to kind of, you know, give yourself an excuse for something not to be perfect. And I think that's, you know, plenty of people do that, and that's very common. And like the previous caller mentioned, that can be adaptive. If you're able to produce work that's passable, maybe it's not up to the standards that you would have set for yourself if you had given yourself more time. But if it's good enough, that kind of behavior can become rewarded.
Mm. Yeah. Years ago, a psychologist told me, I was seeing one 30 years ago. He said, Tom, you have to remember, your okay is better than most people's very good.
Hmm.
Right.
So now that you're retired, Tom, do you still procrastinate? And if so,
oh yeah, I'm procrastinating right now. I should be outside painting some trim on the house, and I'm sitting here at the computer and listening to the radio.
Well, that's obviously more important. You can always get to the house, right?
Well, okay, I'm going to get out there eventually.
Okay,
the weather's warm. I got to get this finished.
Yeah. You can look at that as a delightful task, because the weather is very warm. Oh, that's funny. Thanks very much for the call. We have lines open. We're talking about procrastination this hour of the program with Dr. Elliot Berkman. He's a psychologist, a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. And we're looking at why we do it, how bad it can get, how it's defined, and things that you might be able to do if it's troublesome to you to change your behavior. Our phone number, lines are open for you right now, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Do we have to do something, do you think, Dr. Berkman, as deliberate and easy as just making a list for ourselves every day? Every day I think I should do a list, and then I've never done a list except for every now and then, and I find it very helpful, of the things that you need to get done during the course of a day.
Yeah, that's a great question, and you know, psychologists have looked at that in studies, and I think it can be a double-edged sword. On the one hand, many people do find it helpful. Lists are good. I think from my perspective, one thing that they can really help with is to break down the steps and make what you need to do more concrete and feel less burdensome. So kind of reducing the cost side of the equation. I mean, for me at least personally, I feel like a lot of the time when I'm when I'm procrastinating, it's because I don't really, there's a lot of uncertainty where I'm working on something and I just don't know what all the steps are, and that in and of itself can kind of feel scary and costly. And so writing down a list makes it concrete, so that's good. But on the other hand, it can also become anxiety-provoking once you actually see the list. I think that's the kind of dark side. If you see the list and everything that you've set your mind to for that day, and that in and of itself can become a trigger to procrastination, is this feeling like it's insurmountable, I'll never be able to finish this whole list today, and so why even bother?
Hmm.
So it's tricky. And I'll add one other thing about the list-making, which is that I've alluded to this sort of amazing human capacity to learn. We can learn from ourselves as well as learning from other people. And so I think that's one of the kind of greatest productivity tips that we've discovered, which is that you want to try to give yourself accurate feedback. And so the list making can be really helpful in the long run if every morning you make a list and then start to kind of review it at the end of the day and say, look, you know, maybe I can make this list and try to figure out how many hours or minutes each of these tasks is going to take me. And then at the end of the day, revisiting that. And over time, you start to figure out, and I think we all would be very surprised at what takes a long time, what doesn't take quite a long time. And the more you do that, the more realistic your lists will be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, in turn, will kind of, you know, make that long list feel less daunting. If you can look at it and say, nope, I'm very confident that I can complete all these things because I know how long they've taken me in the past. And that can be really good.
Steve on Facebook writes to you, please have you, Doctor, comment on the role of depression in all its forms and how it impacts procrastination. It prevents us from seeing the real value of the rewards of doing today what could have been done tomorrow. Steve also wonders if procrastination tendencies can be passed along in genes.
Those are big questions.
Mm-hmm.
They're great questions. So I touched on that, the connection between procrastination and depression. And I'll just preface it by saying I'm not a clinical psychologist and I'm not an expert in depression, but I know enough about procrastination and goals to know that one of the kind of key features of depression is, the psychological term is anhedonia, right? Lack of pleasure. And insofar as procrastination is really about figuring out how rewarding something will be and kind of computing it and using that to motivate you, then certainly depression is going to kind of throw a wrench into things. And I know that that's something experts in depression have thought about that quite a bit, sort of how does procrastination play into depression and can sometimes exacerbate it. If you feel like your self-worth is very low and you can't accomplish anything, so you don't even try, and that kind of, you know, perpetuates this cycle of low self-worth.
Let's go to Marlene in Wauwatosa next. Hi, Marlene.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
Dr. Bergman, I wanted to ask a question. Is it possible for a person to be a procrastinator and in parts of their life and then not in others? For example, I am, you know, fanatical about having those bills paid almost before they're due. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I have a lot of money by any means. I will not fall down on that. There are other things. If I tell someone I'm going to put something in the mail or do something, that has to be done in 24 hours. Only there are other areas of my life that I find extremely difficult. And the things that I just mentioned, it doesn't necessarily need to be pleasurable, for example, paying the bills or, you know, making sure that's all done. But the other areas I find very, very difficult to do.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks for your question. I think, Marlene, you illustrate well that it's entirely possible to procrastinate in some areas and not others. I think psychologists, that's sort of a flaw in the way that we tend to think about procrastination is, in fact, Kathleen mentioned this earlier, is that we try to measure it as kind of a trait, right? Like you're either a procrastinator kind of person or you're not.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, I think the kind of deeper thing is that at the trait level, I think, is your tendency to delay or to discount delayed rewards. And I think that is relatively stable. But I think there's a lot more room for kind of situation or domain-specific kinds of procrastination in terms of the costs. So I wonder if it's that, you know that putting something off will discount it a certain amount for you, but that maybe in your case, not paying the bills seems so scary. It would be such a bad thing that the costs of that become really high, and then you're able to kind of overcome that discounted reward. Whereas in other domains, it may be that you don't see the cost as quite so high, or maybe the ultimate rewards aren't quite so high, and then that would explain why you're more, you tend to procrastinate more in those domains.
Hmm. So fear is a great motivator?
Yeah, it certainly can be.
Interesting. Thanks, Marlene. Let's go to Brian in Hartford. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Not too bad.
Good.
My question is in regard to my kids and their homework. It seems like when there's projects due, they like to procrastinate, put it off as long as they can. The more I encourage them to work on it, it seems like the more they want to put it off, almost
right.
Like a form of rebellion.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything that I can do differently to encourage them to hopefully have them not procrastinate so much?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'm assuming, Brian, that your kids are they're adolescents, college age?
Yeah, one's in eighth grade and the other is in sixth.
Got it. Yeah, that's, I think you make a really good point that even potentially by encouraging them to do it, I mean, and this is something that's well known about teenagers and, kids of certain ages, that just the mere fact that an authority figure tells you to do something kind of has an incentive not to do it, because it's valuable to them to kind of assert their will and to try to define their identity with respect to authority and those kinds of things. So it's totally possible that just not reminding them, or at least having the reminder come from somebody else or some other source, might be one way to go about it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that would be one tip. Another tip would just be to try to maybe break it apart for them a little bit. I think it, certainly with school projects, I've noticed this with my own students, that but the mere fact that you're telling them and you're providing them reminders is itself also a reminder that the project is really big and that it's the kind of project that somebody would need to work on for a long time. And just putting it in that kind of bucket psychologically might make it feel more costly or more effortful than it really is. And so that's certainly trying to maybe almost downplay the amount of effort that goes into it would be another way to encourage them to get started.
And when you say perhaps somebody else should tell them, is there one person who might be more effective than another, say a teacher or an extra neighbor?
I'm not sure. I think, with kids in that age range, I think teacher or, any kind of adult might not be the best source. I think more and more people are using these electronic reminders
that
sort of use tasks. There's a whole range of them available for smartphones and computers that are kind of task management software for personal projects.
Mm-hmm.
Those can be really effective because you set it up, and in some ways it's like a self-persuasion tool. It's sort of like, here's me from yesterday telling me of today to work on this right now. And, in some ways that's a more palatable nudge than, oh, this is my dad telling me to do this.
Right, yeah. Thanks, Brian, very much for your call. Judy in Lodi, hi.
Hi. You talk about procrastination. I've got more serious problems than Carter's got pills. I'm an invalid, and I see doctors more than I do anything. And I've got glaucoma, but I've got paintings that's been sitting to paint for the last year. I've got rocks to be painted, and they're sitting right next to me with the pens to decorate, bags to decorate, bills to be paid, and I just don't have the initiative to do anything, and it's getting really to me.
Mm.
And I don't know where to go anymore or what to do. And, of course, that brings on depression.
Dr. Bergman.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Judy, I don't think you're alone in this experience. Certainly, that's something that can happen when you have kind of health issues, is that everything, one of the kind of really insidious parts of certain health problems is that everything becomes more costly. In some kind of sense, is that just doing what you used to do takes more effort, it has more cost, it hurts more than it used to. And that can be, as you're living, I mean, that can be a really debilitating kind of thing. And I'm not sure, you know, I can't speak to what's happening exactly in your case, but in general, I think this happens very often. Even when something has a lot of value for it and you really want to do it, it just feels like something you can't do. I'm not 100% sure that I would call that procrastination. Mm-hmm. It may be something different. But, you know, I think all I can say in those general cases is that I still think that trying to find ways to increase the value of what you're doing, the painting that you're talking about, or trying to come up with ways of mitigating the cost. So what is it that makes it so hard? And sometimes those are really kind of practical things that you really have no control over. And in that case, I would say, again, it's sort of stepped outside the realm of procrastination, and now you're just talking about, you know, I'm too busy. I don't have the resources to actually do this.
Mm-hmm. So it might behoove Jody to carry this on further with, if she can, a psychologist or somebody, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Judy, for your call. We'll take more of them. We're talking about procrastination this hour of the program, and Dr. Elliot Berkman is our guest. He wrote a piece that we found interesting, and we thought that, well, you know, we all think about this. We call ourselves procrastinators, either chronic or short-term procrastinators. Why do we procrastinate? And if you want to change your behavior, which might be good for you, your mind and your body, what can you do to change your behavior? Dr. Elliot Berkman is assistant professor of psychology at the University of Oregon, and his research is to understand how behavioral, motivational, and neural systems work together to help us pursue our goals. He teaches courses in statistics, neuroimaging, social psychology, and we're welcoming phone calls. His blog, The Motivated Brain, is located at Psychology Today. Here's how you reach us. Did I give you the number again? 800-486-8655. There are lines open for you right now. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and Twitter is at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about procrastination this hour of the program. And Felcia, is that how you pronounce your name, from Madison? Felcia?
Hello?
Hello? Oh, Felicia. Felicia.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
So I have heard, I think it's the flylady.net, and she has a technique where you spend only 20 minutes doing something you really don't want to do. And I was wondering, how effective is this in a daily way to apply this kind of strategy, like 2 minutes to do this or 5 minutes on the dishes and then back off?
What is it you don't want to do, Felicia?
Pardon me?
What is it you don't want to do?
I don't know. There's things that I really love cleaning, but then there would be like a particular thing, like the bathroom, for example.
Right.
Where I would just be like, no, please. But I
right.
could do my friend's bathroom, and I would be like, oh, move out of the way. Let me get that clean for you. So it's not very consistent, and it's not like some, you know, particular closet in mind or anything like that. It sort of comes and goes in different things.
Yeah. Well, how about that 5 minute rule, Dr. Berkman?
I think it's a great idea. I hadn't heard that tip before, but I think it makes a lot of sense based on what we know about psychology, and especially what you're talking about are what we would call extrinsic rewards. They're not things that you really care about intrinsically. They're not something that you personally value, but it's sort of something you need to do. I mean, a lot of times, you know, cleaning or other kind of housework certainly falls under that category. A lot of just work, employment work falls in that category. And it seems like what it's doing is it's relying on this clever persuasion principle. This guy named Bob Cialdini would refer to as the door in the face. And the procedure for the door in the face is to first make a request. Usually, he usually talks about it of another person, but it sounds like it kind of works with yourself too, which is you make a request for something large, and that usually gets the proverbial door slammed in your face. And then you knock again and ask for something much smaller. And the relative, kind of the difference between that makes it feel like that second request is more reasonable and more manageable. And so people are much more likely to acquiesce to that smaller second request compared to if you just straight up ask them for it originally. So I think what's at work here is that the cleaning, maybe if you don't think about a time limit on it, might feel like, oh, this is going to take hours and hours. And you're kind of saying to yourself, you know, no, you know, slam the door in your own face. I'm not going to do that for hours. But, hey, maybe I can just do it for 5 minutes. And it's like, okay, you know, I can handle that compared to several hours. And that can be really effective. The other reason I think that might be effective is because this old trick in goal pursuit is sort of you want to try to develop a habit of doing the things that you don't want to do originally. And the best way is to do them in little pieces and to get little rewards for that. I mean, that's the way that you develop a habit, by doing something and getting rewarded for it. So maybe it's that you kind of prove to yourself that if you clean your bathroom for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, it still makes a difference, and it's enough to kind of make that behavior more likely again in the future.
Thank you, Felicia, unless you had something else.
No, thank you very much.
Yeah,
very helpful.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Ryan in Waukesha. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Just a comment. I've been an educator for many years, and regarding getting kids to do what they're supposed to do, particularly as it applies to homework, I found very effective, not only as an educator but as a parent, is kids really enjoy and crave being in charge of their own space and time. And one of the things that I've done that's been very effective is say, what is your plan? We need to get the homework done. We know what the deadline is. What is your plan to do this? And then help them with their plan, and you be the monitor of their plan and assist them. But they're in charge of determining when the deadline is and how they're going to get to it. And obviously, as the adult in the room, we can hold them to that and do it in an empowering way. And I found that very effective with kids.
Dr. Berkman.
Yeah, Ryan, that's a great comment. I think it's absolutely spot on. I mean, we know that what we would call autonomy or self-determination is intrinsically motivating. It's something that we really want, we need, apparently, as human beings. It makes sense. And that the other thing is that having ownership over something also provides, kind of endows that thing with value. So I think those two things together would suggest that would be a great trick.
It's worked well for me in the past. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ryan. Thanks very much for the call. Well, Dr. Berkman, I want to thank you so much for being with us this hour to talk about something that, you know, we all kind of joke about it, but it's nice to have a serious conversation about procrastination.
Yeah, it was a pleasure to be on. Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you. Dr. Elliot Berkman, he's a professor of psychology at the University of Oregon. And thanks very much to Scotty Myers for doing production of this show and on-air production as well in our studios here in downtown Milwaukee. Tomorrow, oh, I like this guy so much, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist Clarence Page will be with us. He's been a guest of ours many times over the years for All Things Political. He's going to be in Madison tomorrow, the keynote speaker at UW-Madison's Diversity Forum, and we'll be speaking with him about all kinds of issues. He can talk about all kinds of issues that touch on diversity in politics and our diversity in our workplace and our educational institutions. And we'll look at the political scene with him and much more. Clarence Page tomorrow during this particular hour. Thanks very much for listening. A reminder that special tonight at 6 o'clock that looks at immigration uncovered, untold stories of moving north. It's a special program, and it is tonight at 6 o'clock here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thank you very much for listening. Central Time ahead.